This is Sarah Reif with Promise of Paradise, Back to the Land, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Today we'll hear a short excerpt from our interview with Anne Scirocco, who lived in the Mendocino National Forest.
I just wanted to be camping, and so that's what I did for 16 years.
So what were some of your first impressions when you moved into the forest?
I don't know. I 3 weeks later, I had a baby. I didn't have time for impressions. And we were happy that the rattlesnakes didn't come through the yurt.
So you were 8.5 months pregnant when you moved into the forest?
I was.
Did you have a home birth?
I did. It was great.
With a midwife or your husband attending? Or how did...
The mountain was a psychiatrist. So he was, he was a doctor. And so he was marginally helpful. I mean, the most helpful thing he did for me was say, around midnight, say, this baby is not going to be born until morning. And I thought, I am not doing this all night. So my attitude changed from, oh, this hurts, to, come on, baby. And then it was an hour and a half later he was born.
Was that the only home birth you had?
No, I had two more.
So what was that like, being pregnant out in the forest?
Just being pregnant, it's like you keep doing the same things. You keep cooking, washing, carrying water. I don't like to carry water, but you do it, garden, get firewood, I never had a thing about, I have to have this kind of food. That seemed irrelevant to me. That never came up for me. I know for many women, they have food urges, and I've got to have pickles and ice cream or whatever, but that wasn't my experience.
Did you have any kind of prenatal care or just... So you said that you had a garden and you built yurts. Did you already have building skills?
We made canvas yurts. So we made those before we went up. We made three of them at one time and then went up and put them up. So when my older son was born, we barely had walls. I mean, the walls were up and we put the roof up, but I don't think we put up the walls yet. But it was cool. Comfortably cool. The breeze come. We're on a hillside and in the evening the breeze is coming up. So it was actually lovely.
What kind of housing and shelter situation did you have to come up with when it got cold?
We stayed in the yurt. So at first we didn't have a wood stove, and my husband had lived in a teepee in the Sierras, so he was used to that. But you can control rain better in a teepee than you can in a yurt. So then we bought three wood stoves from a guy in Willits named Kirk. I don't even know what his first... I still have that stove in the mountains. It says Kirk on it. He put his name on it for us. And then, you do with a stove. And then we also used a Japanese country technology called a kotatsu, which is you take embers out of the fire and put them into a clay pot. So we were on a dirt floor. So we dug a hole in the middle of the dirt floor and had a little table over that. And you could sit on the floor at that table and put your feet down in the bottom. And in the middle was a clay pot. And it was filled with embers. And then over the table, you put quilt. And then a tabletop on top of that. And it keeps you really warm. There's lots of jokes about how if you go into the kotatsu, you never come out. Too comfortable.
How long did your yurts last?
They were still there. And so we were there for 16 years.
So what were some other homesteading skills that you had to learn or figure out?
I don't know about figure out. I mean, I had to learn how to cook on charcoal and on wood. I'd never done that before. And wood is, well, it's messy, but it's pretty easy. But, I got pretty good at cooking on charcoal. And the Kirk stove, the way it was designed, you could put a whole turkey in there overnight. And then in the middle of the night, if you took it out and added some more cinders, we'd save all our embers in a closed pot. We incorporated a lot of Japanese traditional technology. And it was a great lifestyle. I really loved it. A lot of people came to visit us from Japan and other places, and they would bring ideas. So we didn't really have a really good way to bathe for a while, and then a new friend showed up from Japan and said, whoa, you just put a 55-gallon drum on a fire and heat it up, and it's fabulous. You're in water up to your neck. It's hot. There's a wooden rack under your feet. You don't burn your feet. You can control the temperature by adding more wood or adding cold water. Night sky. There was nobody else living around us. It was very different from the greenfield feeling where there's lots of people living, doing their thing close by. There was nobody. There were maybe Cobb Mountain had intentional communities, but they tended to be spiritual. Yeah, we'd have Rajneeshis come by too. Good Lord. not him himself, but his people, they're just orange.
So why did you eventually come back to town?
My older son wanted to go to school. after the Kobe earthquake, he got an airplane ticket and went to Kobe to help. And he said, well, I'll come back if I can go to school. And I kind of wanted him to come back. I thought that would be a good idea.
Is there a particular memory of that time that's especially emblematic of the experience for you?
No, but I can say that I have lines now that I draw in terms of living. If I were go back and live out in the countryside, way out in the mountains again, that I want the water to run in and I want it to run out. I can take the temperature, but I don't want to carry water in or I don't want to carry water out. And I want one light. Because if you hear some crazy loud noise at night and you wonder what it is, you really want to be able to flip one switch and not have to look around for a lighter to light kerosene or to do some kind of other process just to get some light to see what's going on, particularly if you have babies. I mean, it's just like one light.
We'll be airing half-hour episodes of Promise of Paradise Oral Histories on Thursdays at 3:30 p.m. Keep an eye out for our webpage, coming soon at kzyx.org. There, we'll have longer versions of our interviews, full transcripts, and maybe even some pictures. Promise of Paradise is supported by the National Endowment for the Humanities, California Humanities, the Arts Council of Mendocino County, the Judy Pruden Historical Preservation Fund of the Community Foundation of Mendocino County, the Mendocino Institute, and Grace Hudson Museum.